let's resume. The time is 12:09 p.m. The next item on the title board's agenda is 2005-2006 number 109. And just for the record, now sitting on the board, we have Sharon Eubanks for the Office of Legislative Legal Services and Dan Domenico for the Office of the Attorney General. This is measures before us on a motion for rehearing for Gene Dubofsky and Patrick Stedman, submitted by Mr. Gruskin. I'll turn it over to you, Mr. Gruskin.
Thank you. Okay. Chairman, my name is Mark Gruskin. I'm with the law firm of Isaacs & Rosenbaum, and our firm represents Gene Dubofsky and Patrick Stedman in this matter. I wasn't here for all the discussion on a previous matter, but while I was hoping that this would be somewhat of a novel matter for you to consider, I actually think you've ad nauseum had an opportunity to consider a legal issue that I'd like to raise with you here. Our motion for rehearing is fairly targeted in this regard. I have a question for you. What does similar to marriage mean? And without expecting a specific answer, I will tell you that the record is void of any answer. Given the hearing on May 17th, you all were pressed and I think had 21 different measures before you. But the typical discussion with proponents didn't really get to occur. And I'm not sure that you had the wherewithal to ask that question, and the proponents didn't really offer up an answer. And I would suggest to you that similar to marriage is a little bit like pornography. You may know it when you see it, but you sure can't define it. And the problem is that when the three of you or the five people sitting at your table or the 15 people sitting in this room go into the voting booth, we should all have a pretty much the same idea of what we're voting on, what we're voting to authorize or what we're voting to prohibit, or at least what a measure is going to effectively accomplish. But I would submit that this is a measure that was designed to be all things to all people, which is problematic because ultimately it won't be. Ultimately, it will be applied judicially in such a way as to be something less than all things to all people. And while it may feel good to think you know what a measure means as you're voting on it, it is disturbing to find out after the election that you were wrong. That, in fact, you voted for something or against something for a reason that had nothing to do with what that measure actually does. And I'm not talking about nirvana or utopia here. I'm talking about what the Supreme Court requires, not just of what you do, but what they require of proponents. The initiative process is not like being at a park where you have a little sailboat and you just set it off on the pond and see where it goes. You have to have some sort of mission. And you have to be able to communicate that mission to the voters. You have to be able to communicate it to petition signers. Before you even get to that phase, you have to communicate it to the title board. And that simply hasn't been done. I don't think anybody knows what similar to marriage means. And I would suggest to you that the only time it's been judicially interpreted was when Nebraska adopted a similar type of provision in its constitution. And the federal court there, frankly, rejected the opportunity to define marriage or the kinds of relationships that are similar to marriage. It said in the case of Citizens for Equal Protection, Inc. versus Bruning, at 368 F sub second 980, decided in 2005, it observed, quote, "The court holds only that the prospective prohibition of any relationship, quote, similar to, end quote, marriage, is both exceedingly vague and overly broad." It talked about relationships that could be similar to marriage, relationships that I would doubt you would think would be similar to marriage. But the point is that none of us really knows what this is. is it supposed to counter the other measures on the ballot relating to domestic partnership? Well, I think that the proponents have at least stated that that is one intent. But that isn't how they define similar to marriage. In fact, they haven't defined similar to marriage. What they've said is that there can be no creation or recognition of a legal status similar to marriage. It doesn't require that it be a same-sex relationship. It doesn't even require that it be an intimate relationship. It simply says that the Colorado and its political subdivisions can't create or recognize any such relationship. Now, is there any sort of clarification on the record, something that could guide you? Well, I think there is, and if I could approach, I'd like to provide you with a document that was submitted at the review and comment hearing.
Thank you.
The proponents responded to the review and comment memo in writing, and the pages are unnumbered. They have a three-page letter, and then pages of substantive comments. And as you can see, in the second unnumbered page, the question was asked, what is a legal status similar to that of marriage, and to whom would it apply? The first answer talks about what legal status is, but I urge you to go to subparagraph B. This applies to all intimate relationships of unmarried persons who are unrelated by blood or adoption. A non-sexual relationship would not be similar to that of marriage. So the definition of what is similar to marriage appears to be, if you take out the negatives in the second sentence, a sexual relationship. So basically, if you have an intimate relationship and there's sex, it will be similar to marriage. But it's nowhere defined as such in the measure. Voters would have no way of knowing that. And frankly, in light of my most recent loss at the Supreme Court, Mr. Kneiser, what the court has said is that the statements of intent that depart from the measure are irrelevant. In the case that decided the title challenge on number 75, there were statements of clear intent by the proponents, and the objectors relied upon those statements, and the court upheld the title board's decision because you did not, because you based your decision solely on the wording of the measure. So is this helpful? I don't know. I think in the broader scheme of things, if it ever got to that, it might be one thing that was looked at. But your objective isn't to figure out what a title is that ultimately will be part of a measure that passes and survives judicial scrutiny. We're not talking about whether or not it's constitutional now. We're talking about whether or not voters are going to know what they are doing when presented with a petition and what they are doing when they're in a polling booth. And I would suggest to you that language that keys around the phrase similar to marriage is meaningless and intended to be so obscure that you can read into it whatever you choose to read into it. And that, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest is a major problem. It's a major problem because it both violates the single subject requirement and it necessarily leads to a misleading title. As I've cited in my motion, the Supreme Court has said that you have to be able to discern, you the title board, you have to be able to discern the consequences of a measure. That was the court's word, not mine, in order to find out whether or not it represents a single subject. Unless you were able to answer my opening question about what is similar to marriage, and unless your answers were all the same, my guess is that you can't meet that standard. And in any event, the goal of the title setting process is to make sure to set up a reasonable speed bump, to to make sure that people aren't voting on things that are going to surprise them once they're in law. And this will most certainly surprise people once it's in law, because they cannot possibly know, whether it's in the petition signing or the voting process, what they're voting on. I'd also suggest to you that this is one of those phrases that is, because it's intended to be vague, is a material ambiguity, much like the phrase in number 29 that I cite in my motion for rehearing. There, the proponents used a phrase in terms of recall petitions about not to exceed a particular percentage, which the court interpreted and said, well, geez, that could mean that a recall petition could be signed by one person. But the measure doesn't say that. The title certainly would have to reflect it if that's what you could discern. And I would suggest to you that it is impossible to describe what is similar to marriage because the measure doesn't do so. The measure is intended to be a trap for voters. If you can see what you want to see in a measure, but the person who preceded you in the voting booth and the person who follows you into the voting booth don't necessarily read the language the same way, we got a problem. And anytime you have a problem that substantial, I would suggest to you, you cannot set a title. You cannot set a title because you cannot figure out what the subject is and whether the relationships have anything to do with one another. The relationships that are being prohibited. And secondly, there's no way that you can set a clear ballot title because, frankly, there's nothing on the record that would suggest to you what this really does or what it really means. And so I would urge you to reconsider your decision in the first instance that this represents a single subject, and in the second instance that a fair title can be set, and withdraw the title, and as you're jurisdictionally empowered to do, give the measure back to the proponents. Let them try again so that we really know what they meant to do.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Gruskin? Ms. Eubanks.
In terms of your argument, would it be fair to say, in general, people would know what marriage means? So would it be possible, in terms of this measure, even though there might be different types of, I don't know, relationships or legal statuses similar to marriage, I mean, if you're prohibiting something other than marriage, even though you don't know what that universe is, I mean, civil unions or domestic partnerships are fairly recent developments. Who knows what else there may be sometime in the future. Is it so ambiguous for voters in terms of the theory of this measure having a single subject because it's prohibiting any sort of legal status other than marriage? I mean, in terms of we don't know what that universe is, but whatever it is, it's prohibited.
I think that the ambiguity doesn't lie in the prohibition or even in the legal status. It's what is similar to marriage. You've identified civil unions and domestic partnerships. A number of foreign countries authorize civil unions between heterosexual couples. That relationship couldn't be recognized here. The federal district court in Nebraska, when it invalidated the similar to marriage language there, you know what relationships it pointed to as being among the threatened relationships? Foster parents, co-tenants, people who share living arrangements, expenses, custody of children, or ownership of property, all of which are legal rights and authorized in terms of either statute or common law. And the fourth one they said was implicated were roommates. Now, realistically, are civil unions and domestic partnerships perhaps on people's mind when they walk into the voting booth? I'll acknowledge that in this election season they probably will be. But it's not limited to domestic partnerships or civil unions. A disinterested federal judge has said it is so wide-ranging, I can only figure out a few of the relationships that are implicated. And he ultimately came to the conclusion that it was overly broad and exceedingly vague and therefore was unconstitutional. If that's the case, if we don't know what similar to means, the proponents don't have an absolute right to put that kind of measure on the ballot. I think Mr. Domenico, in an earlier hearing, talked about the key question. Do voters as a body have a sense of what this is going to do? Not are there varying interpretations, but do the words actually used in the title communicate enough that voters say, I know what I'm voting on? It is not possible with this language to answer that question in the affirmative. And because of that, you cannot set a title.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Do you think that the clause that follows the legal status similar to marriage in both the title and the measure itself, referring to the Uniform Marriage Act, anything to the understanding of marriage, of the phrase similar to that of marriage?
I don't think that that really identifies anything other than the criteria for marriage that existed in 2005.
Right.
And frankly, the criterion, if we really use that criteria, those criteria, marriage is defined in current statute as a union between a man and a woman. Well, in that event, both Ms. Eubanks and I would be grossly mistaken when we walk into the voting booth and vote on this thing, because a civil union and domestic partnership, which we thought was similar to marriage, necessarily can't be. So, I mean, the confusion, if anything, is compounded by that phrase, which is intended to limit what marriage was viewed as being at a certain point in time. I don't know if that answers your question, but...
No, it does.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much, Mr.
Okay, thank you. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on the motion for rehearing? Mr. Norton?
Yes, Mr. Humphrey. Mr. Chair and members of the board, Michael J. Norton on behalf of the proponents, Representative Kevin Lundberg and Wilfred G. Perkins. When I learned this morning of this hearing, I took the liberty of preparing a response.
Yes, please.
Be incorporated in the record at this point in time. I have a few extra copies here, but not that many. I think that the arguments of the motion for rehearing are specious and fallacious, and I have attached to the response the same letter that Mr. Buskin tendered to the board as Exhibit A, though it does go into fairly exhaustive detail in response to questions and issues raised by the Office of Legislative Counsel and Legislative Legal Services, which, among other things, included a question about what does similar to mean. And I would direct the board's attention to that attachment, Exhibit A, specifically the attachment to Exhibit A, which is the substantive comments section, where on response to comment 6 from the Office of Legislative Counsel, issues regarding what does legal status similar to that of marriage mean were very carefully addressed, and I incorporate those arguments at this time into the record as to what legal status is, as to what relationships are covered. Point of fact, relationships which are in any way, shape, or form counterfeits for or substitutes of marriage are covered by this proposed initiative. Similar to is used in its ordinary common sense meaning, to mean like, much the same as, or resembling. We are to interpret statutes, including constitutional initiatives and statutes and amendments, in their plain and ordinary and commonsensical meaning. And I think that the questions of the board, at least as I perceive them, demonstrate the fallaciousness of this argument. I don't want to really go through in any detail the verbiage content of my response. It sets forth the responsibilities of this board, and I think subsequently, if it should become necessary, the courts as well. Quite clearly, this initiative as proposed complies with the single subject requirement of the Constitution as guided by statutes and case law. And quite clearly, the title is not deceptive, misleading, unfair, or otherwise need of any kind of amendment or clarification from the decision made by the board last week. I would cite to the board a case decided on May 26, 2005 in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, Franklin Circuit Court, Charlotte Wood and all others versus Commonwealth of Kentucky, civil action number 04CI01537, an unpublished decision which really dealt with very much the same issue, although it also added, it was a broader and more expansive amendment which was on the November 2, 2004 ballot in Kentucky and passed by a fairly sizable margin of 1.2 million plus to 417,000 and some odd votes. And the amendment language was, are you in favor of amending the Kentucky Constitution to provide that only a marriage between one man and one woman shall be a marriage in Kentucky, comma, and that the legal status identical to or similar to marriage for unmarried individuals shall not be valid or recognized. Very much language like is in this proposed initiative 109 and is before this board on this motion for rehearing. The plaintiffs in that case, similar to Mr. Gruskin on the motion for rehearing in this case, argued that the electorate was unable to discern from the language of the amendment the impact on suits for wrongful death, intestate inheritance, hospital visitation, medical decisions, decision-making capacity for burial and funeral arrangements, protection under Kentucky's domestic violence statutes for spousal abuse, the ability of businesses and local governments to provide health insurance or bereavement leave to domestic partners, the legal status of existing contractual agreements between unmarried individuals as to durable powers of attorney, health care surrogate designations, designations of guardianship, and adoption agreements. In fact, the courts in Kentucky found those arguments to be specious. I urge this board likewise to find the arguments of the motion for rehearing to be without merit and to deny that motion. We're not here to decide the need, wisdom, or social desirability of Initiative 109, really not up to this board to determine, decide whether or not the potential implications or consequences of this amendment are made known to the electorate. That will surely flow from the point in time, if at all, that this amendment makes it on to the ballot for this upcoming November. Thank you, Member of the Board. I'd be pleased to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Mr. Norton? Okay, thank you. Mr. Gruskin?
Well, I guess I would like to call the board's attention to two things. In the response submitted, which I've just seen, paragraph 7, it states that there are statutes in states that approve reciprocal beneficiary relationships. And it concludes saying these approaches create a legal status for unmarried couples and focus on the couple relationship, therefore they would violate the proposed amendment. Well, Okay, I accept that. But then if you go to the letter that was submitted to review and comment, under comment number 5, the proponents were asked whether or not their measure would have any effect on a measure like Senate Bill 06-166, which provided for reciprocal beneficiaries. And the final paragraph basically goes through the various rights involved, and the last sentence says, thus the initiative would not affect legislation similar to Senate Bill 06-166. So now we've got a contradiction. Either it does or it doesn't affect those kinds of relationships. It pretty much makes my case. If the proponents don't know, or if the proponents haven't made up their mind, or if it changes over time, how are voters supposed to know? And what are voters supposed to think? And why is it that this measure, which the proponents of which can't actually tell you what similar to marriage means, why is it that this measure should be on the ballot? I would suggest to you also, if you take a look at page 3 of their motion, paragraph 8, the last sentence says, thus, a legal status would be, quote, similar to that of marriage, end quote, if it involves public recognition, licensing, registration, or regulation of domestic relations. How in the world would people know that? And why in the world, other than a statement of intent by proponents, why in the world would the courts be so limited? And even if they were limited, think of the nature of relationships that involve any of the following: public recognition, licensing, registration, or regulation of domestic relations. You don't have to be married in order to be subject to domestic relations laws. You don't have to be married in order for Fourth Amendment zones of privacy to be implicated based upon a relationship. And I would suggest to you that the definition here, had it been in the measure, at least would have provided voters with some standards. But it's not the measure. And if it's not the measure, based on the decision in number 75, you can't use it as the defining aspect of the title. If there is no defining aspect of the title, you leave it up to voters. And if the proponents can't really know whether or not it extends to a list of relationships, how in the world is everybody else supposed to know? This is as problematic a measure, notwithstanding its brevity, and notwithstanding the fact that the title reflects the verbiage used in the measure. This is as problematic a measure as I can remember in terms of having voters have any sense of what this is about. And you cannot rely upon the public debate over the issue or the blue book, because people will be asked to sign petitions with this information there. And how will it be supplemented? Unlike other instances in which there's actually a text that tells you more, they'll have no idea. And that, I would suggest to you, for the court's purpose, is every bit as problematic as what's on the ballot in terms of how they vote. This doesn't represent an identifiable subject, because we can't really know what similar to marriage means. And because it doesn't represent an identifiable subject, it cannot possibly represent a single subject. And if it doesn't represent a single subject, you don't have jurisdiction. The proponents can try this one again, but this is a measure that, like others where the court has had problems with these kinds of booby traps, that ought to be returned to the proponents so that it can be improved for consideration at some other point. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Gerskin? Mr. Norton, I would like to ask you to follow up on that, because I am a little confused.
Sure.
It doesn't, sure. It does, you know, I've just, since we just got your brief this morning, I am having some difficulty squaring it with the responses to legislative counsel. I mean, I thought I understood that, but but I'm having trouble understanding, again, paragraph 7 of your brief this morning, that this that I think you're saying the effect would be to prohibit reciprocal beneficiary statutes, and I'm just having trouble reconciling all of that in my mind.
I think, Mr. Chair, this relates to Mr. Gruskin's comments about comment number 5 and the substantive comments of the attachment to the Legislative Council. Mm-hmm. And let me say, in response to Mr. Gruskin's observations and to this question from the Chair, that the language that should be relied upon in terms of the response to this question is the preceding three paragraphs. I frankly have to admit to the Board that I'm not sure I know precisely what Senate Bill 06-166 did or proposed it to do at the time that these comments were drafted. What I presumed and surmised was Senate Bill 0-166 sought to implement things or relationships such as that set forth in the Legislative Council's question, which is set forth in bold at comment number 5. And that is what this language answers or seeks to answer to the extent that Senate Bill 06-166 creates domestic partnerships. And let me just paraphrase paragraph 1. To the extent that Senate Bill 06-166 serve to create domestic partnerships or civil unions for same-sex couples and would, as a result, extend official or legal recognition to or otherwise recognize such relationships, that under Amendment 109 or Initiative 109 would be unconstitutional. Similarly, however, 109 would not prohibit the range of things that are set forth in that full paragraph. Receipt of benefits that individuals are now entitled to receive under current law. However, the initiative would prevent same-sex couples from receiving benefits as a couple because it would prohibit the government from granting rights and benefits to such a same-sex couple on the basis of a legal union, no matter what it may be called, domestic partnership, civil union, or by some other name. The initiative would not prohibit the granting of benefits to an individual government employee that he or she could share with some other person of that person's choice, providing the extension of benefits was generally available to all unmarried employees and was not premised on the existence of a relationship equivalent to, similar to, counterfeit of, or substitute for marriage. And then the same argument applies in the final paragraph. To the extent that I misunderstood what Senate Bill 6-166, in fact, beyond those questions did, I made an error in the final sentence in that section. To the extent that there is any conflict, the initiative, and I don't know if there is, but to the extent that there is any conflict, the initiative would prevail. Hope that answers the question, although in much more detail probably than you desired.
No, I think so. I'm really struggling to try to think all of that through. I appreciate the reference to comment 5. I think there's a fairly clear written statement from proponents there on what they believe the measure would prohibit and what it would not. I'm still a little bit stuck though on your response in paragraph 7, bottom of page 2. I just want to understand, I mean, I think your position is that where although Hawaii and Vermont adopted reciprocal beneficiary statutes that extend benefits to couples based on the legal status, et cetera, I think you're saying that would be prohibited by this measure. And I'm wondering, is that correct, and if so, why? And that seems a little inconsistent, and again, I'm just trying to puzzle this out. It seems a little inconsistent with proponents' responses to comment 5.
I don't see it as inconsistent, Mr. Chair. I see it as consistent with the exception of the last sentence, which I confess I don't fully know the implications of Senate Bill 6-166. I see the two responses as fully consistent with one another.
I'm probably where I'm confused, but I'm not sure I can shed any light here. When I read the measure, I really don't have the difficulty that I think Mr. Gruskin is describing. I mean, I appreciate very much the Nebraska case, but it's hard for me to read this measure and see how this measure could extend to co-tenants, for example.
Could extend to what, sir?
Co-tenants, roommates.
Or Fourth Amendment search and seizure issues, or rights of privacy in general.
I don't see those relationships as being similar to marriage. I don't see that there could be any reasonable confusion about it. I understand that there's questions of interpretation of what is marriage and what is similar to marriage. But just reading the measure by itself, I'm just not quite there yet with Mr. Gruskin. But then when you start to break it apart, based looking at these materials, on the one hand, I was looking at the measure as comparing the legal status of various relationships. But the materials seem to suggest that what the measure may prohibit is not just alternative recognition of alternative relationships that are like marriage, but rather granting benefits that are currently available to spouses, granting them in non-marital situations. And that potentially is, I think, huge and goes far beyond what I understood the measure to be about.
I think, Mr. Chair, you're correct. I do not think the measure is intended to deal with or otherwise affect the kinds of situations or relationship that you've just suggested, unless the relationship is created or recognized as a marriage or something that is similar to a marriage.
Can I just ask you the similar question I asked Mr. Gruskin about the reference to the Uniform Marriage Act? Looking at the sections you've cited, those are, for the most part, technical licensing sections. The only real description of marriage I see in there is that it's between one man and one woman. Is that essentially the description? The language in the title and in the measure is as described in the sections 14.2.101 through 14.2.104 from the Uniform Marriage Act. The only real description in there of marriage, besides that it has to go through some licensing process, is that it's between a man and a woman. Is that what that's intended to reference?
Well, I think, frankly, as Ms. Eubanks pointed out, you start with marriage. And you start with marriage as is defined in the Uniform Marriage Act, and similar to modifies or relates to marriage as defined in the Uniform Marriage Act. Those specific sections of the Uniform Marriage Act, Mr. Domenico, do, as you suggest, contain some technical language in terms of, first of all, the 101, section 14-2-101, contains the short title, which is cited as the Uniform Marriage Act. Section 14-2-102 contains the purposes and rules of construction regarding the underlying purposes to strengthen and preserve the integrity of marriage and to safeguard meaningful family relationships and to provide adequate procedures for the solemnization and registration of marriage. Section 103 talks about the uniformity of its application and construction, and then Section 104 contains the formalities. And Section 104 is really the heart and guts of what a marriage is, because it, in subsection 1B, specifies that it is only between one man and one woman. So it breathes that definition, one man and one woman, and the rest of those four sections into this proposed constitutional amendment. I don't know if that answers the question.
No, it does.
I think it strengthens the amendment as opposed to weakens it.
It does. And let me just, to follow on Chairman Hobbs' question, make sure I understand sort of where we're where we're getting here is, I mean, essentially, marriage as a civil institution, as a government institution, is a shortcut to certain legal benefits of the type Mr. Hobbs referred to. You are not proposing, and you don't understand this measure, to forbid people who are unmarried from gaining those benefits. The measure, as I understand it, prevents the creation of other statuses, legal relationships that serve the same purpose of creating a shortcut to those benefits. So people could still, in essence, contract or go through the steps to get those benefits, whether or not they're married, same-sex couples. But they wouldn't be able to, the state or its subdivisions wouldn't be able to create a similar shortcut. Is that?
I think that's an accurate way of looking at it, Mr. Domenico. And so long as those benefits, whatever they might be, and benefits could be extremely broad and amorphous, but the answer to comment number five on the attachment to response specifies at least some of the benefits that the opponents and Mr. Gruskin have raised concerns about being in jeopardy. So long as those benefits are not premised on recognition or creation of a legal status similar to marriage, this amendment would not affect them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Gruskin.
In light of the preceding conversation, it seems to me that there is a new issue, a truly problematic issue in front of you. This measure isn't about limiting the creation or recognition of status. It's about limiting the capacity of people to access certain benefits or opportunities provided by the status of marriage. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say that. Now, one of the responses to question number five says the initiative would prevent same-sex couples from receiving benefits as a couple because it would prohibit the government from granting rights and benefits to such a couple on the basis of a legal union, whether called domestic partnership, civil union, or by some other name. So if this is really all about benefits, which is what you've just heard, it's not about the creation of a status or even the recognition of a status. It's about what flows from that status. Now, you're in a box, and you know what? I'm so glad I'm not you right now, because now you're presented with an initiative that says one thing and proponents that say another. And the court has told you 3 days ago, forget what the proponents tell you it means. You need to look at it and see what it actually says. So notwithstanding all the comments that have been presented to you, you need to take a look at it and see what it really says. And I would suggest to you that this is a little bit like the Wizard of Oz standing behind the curtain, where someone is basically saying, don't pay no attention to what these words actually say. This is what we mean to flow from them. And based on the court's decision of 3 days ago, that's not good enough. Mr. Domenico, I don't think, agrees with me.
Well, no, I think one or the other of us, I think, misheard what Mr. Norton was telling us. What I thought he told us was, in fact, this doesn't cut off benefits. It cuts off the creation of a status similar to marriage that allows for a shortcut to those benefits. So I heard him to say essentially what the opposite of what you're saying, that this isn't about eliminating the access to certain benefits. It's about eliminating a shortcut to those. And the shortcut is the recognition of a certain legal status based on a relationship. And one of us seems to be mishearing what...
It's probably me.
Well, I don't know.
I'll grant you the fact that it is probably me. But I would suggest to you that there's nothing in this measure that talks about benefits. The question before you and the question before voters is, what does this thing actually say? And what this thing actually says is that the state and its political subdivisions can't create or recognize any relationship that's similar to marriage. What does that mean? You know what? We've been here for, I don't know, 45 minutes to an hour, and I have, as of yet, other than I did listen to my own comments. But I have, as of yet, to hear anyone say, I know what similar to marriage means. Or it's pretty clear what similar to marriage means. I don't think that there's any question that marriage is a defined term. It means a relationship between a man and a woman. But there's nothing about, at least when I got married, there was no agreement about benefits or relative benefits. And actually, there was no agreement about sex either. But I'm not sure either benefits or sex defines whether or not you're married. The question is there a status, in the words of the initiative, is there a legal status that is provided? Notwithstanding the fact that Mr. Norton may disagree, there is a legal status and there are legal capacities that flow from being married, and that flow from certain relationships that may be analogized to marriage. Nobody knows what those are. And you know what? If I'm wrong, I'm asking you, will you fill in the void? And if I'm not wrong, I don't see how you can set a title. And Mr. Domenico is probably right. If I've misinterpreted Mr. Norton's comments, I apologize to Mr. Norton. I apologize to the board for taking up more time on the last day of its last meeting. Thank you.
Thanks.
Ms. Eubanks.
Mr. Gruskin. While it seems that the discussion of what may fall within the scope of that term, as it appears in the measure, seems applicable to both the arguments that you've set forth in your motion for rehearing, it seems like you've been focusing primarily on sort of single subject. Are you pursuing the second argument, even if we were to find a single subject, in terms of the title still being misleading because people don't know? I mean, you've been focusing more on the single subject, and I just wanted to clarify whether or not you're pursuing both of your arguments.
Ms. Eubanks, I am pursuing both arguments. Because it seems to me that even if you decide that this passes muster in terms of single subject, there still has to be an adequate representation so that people know what they're voting on in terms of the accuracy of the title. And so if you deem it a single subject, it seems to me the same problems adhere, because people cannot possibly know what they're voting on.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Norton, do you have anything to add? Or?
I have one final parting comment, Mr. Chair, and that is, in light of Mr. Grusin's comments, I suggest that you accept his offer to disregard not only what he has said, but I ask you to disregard what I have said and look at the plain and simple language of the initiative.
Is there anybody else who wishes to testify? If not, I'll turn to discussion by the board.
Well, I'll start. Seems to me that I share some of the concerns with this that I expressed earlier about a measure that includes terms that are open to multiple interpretations. But for the same reasons I discussed before, I don't think that makes it impossible to set a title. It would be rather perverse if our system was that we required titles and measures to be extremely detailed and complex and rejected short, simple constitutional amendments along the lines of the original constitutional amendments. So I think the fact that some of these provisions may be open for debate, unless that ambiguity leads the measure and title to be misleading somehow, I don't think that means we can't set a title, or that it causes it to violate the single subject prohibition. So that said, I agree that there's a lot of room for discussion about some of these, and I'm sure that in the coming years there will be that discussion. But I don't think it's misleading in any way, and so I don't have a problem either with the single subject or the jurisdiction to set a title on that basis. And I think that's all we have to address.
Well, I think that's where I am at this point. Still trying to think this through, but you know, it's a given that any measure that we have, is there's going to be legal questions about it. We seem like every single one of these, every single meeting, we face the fact that there's ambiguities and there's questions, and you know, some of the ones that we've seen seem to have lately that we've had more questions than others. You know, number 125 today, for example, damages for mineral extraction, a lot of questions about it. And the question in my mind is, you know, what is there a point at which a measure, well, a general measure that doesn't provide a lot of detail, you know, is there a point where proponents have to provide that detail? And, you know, our discussion this morning, I think, on number 125, led me to believe that, you know, like the sections in Article 2, the Bill of Rights section of the state constitution, proponents can have general statements that leave a lot of questions unanswered. And at the same time, we know from the case law that the uncertainties about a measure can rise to such a level that the measure is incomprehensible, that we cannot set a title if the measure is incomprehensible. I'm not sure that's a sufficient statement of the law here, but I recognize the fact that there may be a point at which the board cannot express a single subject because the measure cannot be well understood well enough to do so. My understanding of the measure at this point, though, is that we have not reached that point. And I don't know that I can add anything to. I hesitate to try to add anything to what's been said about it because I'm just going to repeat some things. I think there's a general concept of what marriage is, and therefore what is similar to marriage. And I think the measure, on its own terms, prohibits recognizing some legal status similar to marriage. And I have been concerned about, are there hidden effects? Are there things that relate to benefits here that I'm not fully apprising? And I think that's not the case. I'm putting a lot of weight on proponents' response to comment 5, back to the review and comment memo. And I think there's a paragraph that seems to accurately describe my understanding about this measure. The initiative would not prohibit individuals in a same-sex relationship from receiving benefits. What it would prohibit is government from granting rights and benefits to a same-sex couple on the basis of a legal union, whether it's called domestic partnership, civil union, or something else. And in other words, taking the measure at face value, it's about recognizing similar relationships. Regardless of what they're called. My understanding is then a domestic partnership or civil union could, the measure might prohibit the legislature from recognizing such a relationship. I say might because I think it would depend on how that relationship was defined. If it's defined to be similar to marriage, I think this proposal before us would prohibit the legislature from recognizing such a relationship. But on the other hand, the way I understand the measure, the legislature can recognize a relationship such as co-tenancy, notwithstanding the Nebraska case. I don't think co-tenancy is similar to marriage. And I think the legislature would still be able, if this measure were to pass, the legislature would still be able to recognize such a relationship. Going back to the response to comment 5, the proponents have said that the initiative would not prohibit the granting of benefits to an individual government employee that he or she could share with another person on his or her choice. providing the extension of benefits was generally available to all unmarried employees and not premised on the existence of the relationship. So I think I've satisfied more or less my concern about this having a much greater effect than I had originally thought it did. It seems to me that it's not about prohibiting the granting of benefits that happen to be associated with marriage, granting those benefits in other situations. I'm not articulating that very well, but I guess what I'm trying to say is I think, in a sense, the general principle here is fairly clear. The legislature couldn't recognize a relationship equivalent to marriage. I assume that relates to benefits in the sense that there, if because by inference, then if the legislature were to recognize a similar relationship with the effect that the benefits associated under the Uniform Marriage Act or whatever then transfer over automatically somehow, then maybe the measure is about benefits. But it, you know, again, that would get into questions that I don't think we have to answer here. The general principle seems clear enough, like number 125 and like others that we face, that it does seem to be a single subject, and I think the titles reasonably reflect that single subject. But Mr. Domenico.
Just to follow up on that, something I wanted to point out that sort of highlights that for me. In fact, the language of the title and the measure refers to a legal status similar to that of marriage, highlighting the legal status that one gets when one is married. Whereas the motion for rehearing, the language in quotes is similar to marriage. It leaves out the legal status similar. It leaves out essentially the legal status part, which is an important thing, I think, that it doesn't just forbid anything that's like marriage. It forbids recognition of a legal status similar to marriage, and I think that highlights the point and sort of separates what's being discussed in the motion for rehearing from the actual language in the title. And I think that highlights the point you were making about the status versus the benefits.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Ms. Eubanks?
Might as well get my 2 cents in for the record. I don't see this as a single subject issue. And the reason is that although there may be questions about which legal statuses are affected or would be prohibited by this measure, whether it's roommates or whatever, if you take that argument, it seems that we would be saying that you could only have a measure that prohibits civil unions or domestic partnerships or roommates or and to me, just the fact that there's perhaps more than one legal status that may be prohibited by the measure, I don't see that as constituting two different purposes. Here you've got a measure that's prohibiting a legal status similar to marriage, even though that may be various legal statuses. And so I just don't see it as a single subject issue. I do see it much more similar to the discussion we had on 125 in terms of being vague, ambiguous in terms of what may be affected by that term, legal status similar to that of marriage. In terms of the discussion we had earlier this morning, we may not know from the measure itself all of the legal statuses that may be affected by this measure. Does that mean that we can't set a title? Is it misleading? Or is it similar to like on 125, it's going to be something that's going to be either through implementing legislation or litigation, those questions are going to be answered. And I think that that's where we are right now. I don't think that the title, as we've set it, by including that term, is misleading of the intent and purpose of the measure in terms of what it may ultimately impact That remains to be seen, but I just don't see it being misleading. I think the title accurately reflects the intent and purpose of the measure, and so that's where I am.
Thank you. Well, on the basis of that discussion, is there a motion with respect to the motion for rehearing?
I'll move that we deny the motion for rehearing.
I second that.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action on number 109. The time is 1:10 p.m. Well, thank you.
Thank you.